KSDP 830 AM Sandpoint, K201DA King Cove, KFPS False Pass.
Welcome to Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. A study out this week suggests that official information about the life expectancy of Native people is off by quite a bit. It says discrepancies in reporting Native identity on death certificates means the gap in death rates compared to the national average is much higher than what we thought all along. They now compare Native life expectancy to that in countries like El Salvador and Bangladesh. One researcher says it amounts to statistical erasure. We'll get details on the new data and find out what it all means right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. The Miccosukee tribe is embarking on a campaign to buy and protect lands in the Florida Everglades. The Guardian newspaper reports that the tribe's in a partnership with the Florida Wildlife Corridor Foundation. The goal is to create a safe habitat for threatened species, including black bears, panthers, and key deer. The initiative was spurred by the Trump administration's slashing of federal funds for conservation projects. Talbert Cypress, chair of the Miccosukee, is quoted as saying the tribe has a constitutional duty to conserve their traditional homelands, the lands, and waters which have protected and fed the tribe since time immemorial. The agreement was announced at a summit of corridor stakeholders in Orlando recently after a study by the Native American Fish and Wildlife Society found that 60% of federally recognized tribes have lost grants or other federal funds exceeding $56 million since Donald Trump began his second term in January. And now we continue yesterday's story about the Hopi 19 and Alcatraz Island from KJZZ's Gabriel Piatarazzo.
With a history glamorized for decades on the silver screen, most notably by the 1979 blockbuster Escape from Alcatraz, starring Clint Eastwood, depicting an iconic real-life prison break by inmates Frank Morris and brothers Clarence and John Anglin a year before The Rock closed in 1963.
Get up, Morris. It's moving day. I said get up, Morris. Open up 109. Morris, I said get up. Jesus Christ.
Again, I think a lot of people look at Alcatraz, they kind of know the stories from the movies when it was a federal prison and then don't really know it's related to indigenous people.
Wendy Holliday is a former archivist for the Hopi Cultural Preservation Office.
When I was doing the research and I lived on the reservation and I was a tribal employee, 100 years after those men were imprisoned at Alcatraz, the story was still so resonant as though it had just happened yesterday.
As much as Alcatraz is about uncommon criminals, it's also associated with boarding schools.
Some of the stories that people would tell me that they had heard kind of passed down was just about the trauma for them and for their family members who were left behind, wondering what happened.
And once she started, Holliday couldn't stop telling that side of the story.
It's not just that they were imprisoned, but they were taken from their ancestral land that was absolutely vital to their spiritual practice and well-being. It was a story that was still very much alive, and I think still today.
Amber Rose Howard is with CURB, Californians United for a Responsible Budget, a coalition of more than 80 groups organizing against prisons across the Golden State.
Of course, Alcatraz is just a non-starter. There's no drinking water, no utilities, no infrastructure. It's hard to tell what's a real threat and what's just fear-mongering. But at this time, I think that we should be taking everything he's saying seriously.
If not Alcatraz, Howard says, undocumented people are likely next to be sent somewhere else. Empty prisons that ICE has been eyeing, even in Blythe along the Arizona-California border.
But I don't think it stops there. It starts with folks who are undocumented, and then it will continue to spill over into disappearing people from underserved, marginalized communities who are black, who are brown, who are indigenous, who don't fit the agenda.
For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Piatarazzo.
And I'm Brian Bull for National Native News in the KLCC studios of Eugene, Oregon.
National Native News is produced by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for over 40 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
DT Track, your healthcare partner across Indian country, supports this show. DT Track provides culturally competent nationwide healthcare staffing to IHS, tribal, and urban health facilities. More at dt-track.com. Support by Siri, with a diverse and strategic investment portfolio for the long-term benefit of their shareholders. Investing in energy, infrastructure, real estate, government services, and more. Information is available at ciri.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. Good information makes for good outcomes. That's why a new study that looks at death rates for Native Americans is so important. It was just published in the Journal of the American Medical Association and suggests what we know about the average life expectancy for Native Americans is way off. The study is based on records for thousands of people over an 11-year time span. It finds the age gap in the average life of Native Americans compared to the population as a whole is almost three times greater than the official statistics researchers and public health officials have used as a baseline for years. Why have the numbers been off? And what can happen now with this current information? Those are among questions we'll talk about this hour, and as always, we want our listeners to be a part of it. Please join our discussion by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Joining us from New Lebanon, New York is Stephanie Woolhandler. She's a distinguished professor at the City University of New York Hunter College. Stephanie, hello. Welcome to Native America Calling.
Glad to be here.
Joining us in the studio in Albuquerque is Michael Byrd. He's a past president of the American Public Health Association and past national consultant for AARP. He's Kiwa Pueblo and Okeawinge. Michael, pleasure to have you back on the show. Welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be with you and appreciate your time and your attention to this most important subject.
Absolutely. And joining us from San Diego, California is Dr. Alec Kalak. He's an American Indian health policy scholar and a medical student at the University of California, San Diego. He's from the Palma Band of Los Sueños Indians. Alec, good morning and welcome back to Native America Calling.
Great, thank you.
Well, let's go ahead and get this conversation started. And Stephanie, I want to begin with you in these Native American mortality rates. What prompted you to look at these statistics, and were there any clues to suggest that the numbers might be off?
Okay. Well, the authors of the current paper were all working together on a report for the British medical journal, The Lancet, about health and public policy under the first Trump administration. And when we went to look at racial disparities in health and healthcare, we were shocked to find how bad the data is and how bad the information is on the health and life expectancy of Native Americans. The most recent estimate we could find was from 2008, and that was just an estimate. No one had really looked at the data hard to figure out what was going on. A few months later, we saw that the Census Bureau was putting together a special study where they interviewed over 4 million people and then followed up looking for their death records, if they died, for 11 years. And we went, gee, that's a big enough number that we could really take a hard look at the life expectancy of the Native American population and fill this gap. However, even we were surprised at just how big the gap was. Official statistics are underestimating or Native death rates, and they're overestimating the life expectancy, and they're failing to recognize the 6.5-year gap in life expectancy between Native Americans and other Americans.
Okay, 6.5-year gap. Give us some more of these numbers that are so important in this study, and tell us more details. I mean, are these differences that you found statistically significant for Native people?
Yes. With that number of people, when you start with 4 million people, almost everything would be statistically significant. But 6.5 years is a very large number when you start talking about years of life. You know, the average American lives just under 80 years, 79.2 years, just under 80 years. The average Native American is living only 72.7 years, so just a little under 73 years. That's a very big gap, and one that really demands that new resources be put into the well-being and health of our Native American citizens. And so we think that's the main take home, is that there needs to be more resources put into addressing the well-being and the health issues that Native Americans face.
Now, we have known for a long time that Native people do have shorter life expectancy than the national average, but these new numbers that you folks have uncovered, tell us more about the implications of this data. Almost three times what we've been working with all this time with regard to life expectancy.
Okay. Well, I guess there's been a fair amount of discussion about so-called diseases of despair, things like suicide and substance use-related deaths. But the largest contributors to the gap in life expectancy are things like heart disease, cancer, diabetes, the same things that most people die of, only Native Americans are dying at a younger age. So that means we need to make resources available to really improve the health of Native Americans broadly and address the well-being of this group in a comprehensive way, not as a one-off program to deal with the diseases of despair issues.
Stephanie, also tell us a little bit more about the methodology here. I understand that you relied on people who self-identify as Native. What went into that decision, and how does that impact the data?
Okay. Well, in the public health literature, okay, and in the demography literature, demography is the science of counting populations, the gold standard for figuring out someone's race and ethnicity is asking them. You can't tell by looking at people, you know. You can't guess. If you want to know their race and ethnicity, you need to ask them, and that is considered the gold standard. And yet, when someone's filling out the death certificate, they don't actually know how the decedent, the person who died, self-identified. They just make a guess. And it turns out that people filling out death certificates, usually a funeral director, is guessing wrong about 40% of the time for Native Americans, up to 50% of the time for people who are Native American, who self-identify as Native American and some other race. I assume they're well-meaning. They're not trying to make mistakes, but they are repeatedly saying that Native Americans are either white or white Hispanic, and occasionally something else. But so they're just putting down the wrong race ethnicity. So this has been going on for decades, I'm sure. It's extremely common for Native Americans who live a long way from reservations and other designated tribal areas. Native Americans living in cities, particularly older Native Americans, are pretty routinely pretty routinely after they die, their race is misidentified on the death certificate, close to 50% of the time. So that leads to gross underestimation of the death rates among people who self-identify, and gross distortion of the statistics and of the thinking in public health about how we set priorities for resources.
Well, what happens now? I'm interested in hearing the next steps, and I would hope at the very least that some education is provided to these folks who are completing these death certificates to be that far off on mislabeling Native American people.
Okay. Well, I think that would be a great idea to have some sort of universal education program for funeral directors. And I assume most of them are well-meaning and would like to do the right thing. I think in the short term, we have provided a bunch of ratios and percentages that will allow people at the Census Bureau and other people who collect data about health to adjust the data to account for the fact that we know there's a gross undercount of deaths among Native Americans. So there's a lot of numbers in the paper, and several of the reporters have said, why did you do so many different numbers? Well, a lot of those numbers are for the use of demographers, for instance, at the Census Bureau, other people looking at vital statistics, so they can adjust the official vital statistics and come up with accurate estimates of what's going on in the Native American community.
Stephanie, thank you for kicking off our conversation today here on Native America Calling. We're going to take a short break, and we will continue this discussion. And I encourage listeners to join us. A new study that looks at death rates for Native Americans just published, and it strongly suggests that average life expectancy for Native American people is way off, and there are a number of factors that we're learning about that have gone into this misinformation or this incorrect data. So the conversation is just getting started. We're going to take a short break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk with Michael Bird. He is in the studio today, and he was also involved with this study. He had a role in it, so we're going to talk with him, as well as Dr. Alec Kalak, who also has insights and expertise to share on this topic. But we're waiting for you to join us as well. Just give us a call at 1-800-996-2848. Maybe you have experience with something like this, some type of an issue where you had a loved one who passed away and a death certificate was incorrectly filled out with regard to that loved one's race. I don't know. Maybe share your story or your experience, or just how does that make you feel to know that Native American people are being mislabeled on their death certificates to this extent? Give us a call. Join the conversation. 1-800-99-NATIVE. The mayor of Tulsa, Oklahoma is pushing a $105 million plan to help the descendants of that city's most notorious race massacre that included Native freedmen. It's the nation's first major official reparations package accounting for past racial violence. We'll get a progress update on the day known as Juneteenth on the next Native America Calling.
Support provided by Amerind. Amerind is 100% tribally owned and partners with tribes and their businesses to provide affordable commercial insurance coverage, protect tribal sovereignty, and strengthen Native American communities by helping to keep dollars in Indian country. Information about property, liability, commercial auto, and workers' comp available at Amerind.com. That's Amerind.com. Hanedu Hana
You're listening to Native America Calling. We're talking about the significance of a new study out this week that has major implications for what we know about the lifespan of Native American people. The analysis in JAMA finds that large numbers of Native Americans are not adequately counted on death certificates. Researchers conclude, as a result, that the average life expectancy of Native people is much worse than previously understood. Why is it important to have accurate reporting of Native people in health data and research? You can join our conversation. Share your insights by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Let's now hear from Michael Bird. He joins us in our Albuquerque studio. He is a past president of the American Public Health Association and past national consultant for AARP. And Michael, we heard from Stephanie earlier, give us an overview of this research, and you had a hand in helping guide the research. Tell us more about your role and how it came about.
Stephanie and David and Jacob and I all have known each other for about 10 years now, and our paths crossed at American Public Health Association annual meeting, and we had a conversation about just the fact that that American Indians, Alaska Native, and Native Hawaiians, for that matter, are oftentimes not represented well, and are not part of the conversation in many arenas. And when you look at nonprofits, when you look at for-profits, when you look at the foundation arena, oftentimes our numbers are small. And of course, anybody who knows Indian history knows why our numbers are small. And I think that what it represents in my mind, first of all, let me just say I'm over 70 years old. I've been involved in public health and many aspects of healthcare for a good 40 some years, and one of the things I've seen is a lack of our own community being represented in many arenas. You know, as far as government goes, BIA, IHS, we're in that game, and you have Indian preference, which obviously, you know, favors Native people being responsible for their own programs and all of that. But when you step outside of that arena, we're not represented to the same degree. You know, I think DEI is a wonderful program, and I'm supportive of the concept, but that really has not really emphasized attention to American Indian communities, American Indian tribes, and so our issues are not oftentimes part of the conversation.
How so, Michael? How does DEI not adequately accommodate for Native populations?
Well, first of all, I think that many people in other communities of color don't know the history of this country, and if you don't know the history starting at the beginning, then you don't know anything about the people who were here first, who are indigenous people. Our representation is oftentimes, we're invisible in this nation today. In so many arenas, people don't see us, they don't know us, and in some cases they don't engage us. And I think in the government sector, as I mentioned before, that it's been acknowledged because of our government-to-government relationship, because of treaties. And so the federal government has had to acknowledge that role, that responsibility, and that relationship. But outside entities, in many cases, universities, again, foundations, again, nonprofits, don't understand that relationship, so they don't see us in the same light, and our numbers are smaller. Mm-hmm. So it's harder to engage us. The one positive thing I would say in a larger scale is that there are a lot more people from our communities who have credentials now than did 40 or 45 years ago. You know, we have more doctors, we have more lawyers, we have more PhDs, we have more JDs at this point in time than we've ever had in history, than our history and our history of this nation. So I think there is the opportunity to ensure that we're visible and that we're included and that we're not just continue to sort of be marginalized, because most people really don't have a connection to Native communities unless they've made a specific effort, as is demonstrated in this case with this research.
Mm-hmm. And Michael, going back to the research, it was really interesting hearing Stephanie's summary. Any of these conclusions, did they surprise you, or did you expect similar results?
I've been around too long. Nothing surprises me. No, this is not a surprise. You know, I mean, if you know Indian history, which I've, you know, dedicated and spent a great deal of my time and effort, if you don't know Indian history, you don't know anything about this country. And you cannot even begin to touch the issues that are significant to our community, because, you know, I mean, the question that needs to be asked is, why are the first Americans the last Americans?
Mm-hmm.
And if you start there and take a deep dive, then you might actually, at the end of your research, come up with a clear understanding, well, these are the things that have happened to Native people, and not be judgmental and not blame the victim, but actually have some compassion and a greater sense of knowledge to be able to be motivated, hopefully, to fund programs, to support programs. We know the Indian Health Service and many of the government programs, that federal programs, are not adequately funded. The Indian Health Service, it's a joke, because it's not a joke in a sense, but the funding is a joke. But everybody knows it's only 40 to 50% of the level of need. That directly contributes to this data and the mortality and morbidity rates that we carry.
Well, Michael, you mentioned the importance of understanding Native history, and perhaps the larger population doesn't understand our history to the extent that is necessary to get the quality data that's required. But this study, it has some interesting terms used in the narrative. Land displacement, forced assimilation, economic disenfranchisement, and colonization. I mean, that's interesting. I want to know more. The motivation for the context of including that type of information or those terms in research about average lifespan.
Well, if you don't understand how did we get here with the data? I mean, how do we end up with such terrible mortality and morbidity rates? I believe that it requires a historical and a cultural lens. And if you don't have a historical and cultural lens, you're going to miss it all. You know, Sir Michael Marmot was a British researcher, and he coined the phrase social determinants of health to in terms of public health thinking. But there's more to it. And our group, our in terms of American Public Health, the Caucus of American Indians, we've coined the phrase historical determinants of health, because there are two communities in this nation who are historically the longest, most disadvantaged. The first is American Indians. The second community is African Americans. Something happened here in the history of this nation that has created those conditions that continue to be perpetuated.
Mm. Going forward, tribal leaders, Native health advocates, how do you envision them using this data and moving forward with possibly figuring out a way to change the trajectory here?
Well, it really, you know, what we need, first of all, we need to continue to have good data, good solid data. We need to fund universities. We need to fund those entities that are doing this kind of work. Because without, and if we don't have good solid data, you know, we can't really act on anything. It's just like taking a shot in the dark. But so that there needs to be resources directed at in terms of research. We need to continue to build programs that train our own community people. As I said, there's a greater pool now today than there was 45 years ago. And we have Native people pursuing all these credentials and degrees and moving into positions at universities and doing their own research, because nobody cares about us more than we care about our community.
Michael, you mentioned the importance of getting good research, of funding good research, and yet we're living in an environment right now where we're seeing billions of dollars being taken away from health research institutions. What do you see as the future here with regard to some of these public health research needs and a current presidential administration that doesn't seem interested in supporting them?
Well, it's my personal opinion is real clear what is being done and why it's being done. If you don't have the money to do the research to explore what the issues are, then there's no problem. It's erasure. It's creating invisible communities, and therefore there's no problem. There's no data. There's nothing to substantiate, the needs of the communities out there, be they black, brown, white, yellow, whatever. Good data provides you with the information you need to act upon. And that's what this does. Why are the first Americans the last Americans? I think that's a question that this nation and our political leaders need to ask themselves.
Are the first residents the first people than the last? I pose that question to listeners. You've got an answer and you're listening to the show right now, or you've got insights, give us a call. 1-800-99-NATIVE. Why are the first Americans the last Americans? 1-800-99-NATIVE. Michael, as you shared, you've been working in public health for four decades. Obviously, you've seen a lot of changes. You mentioned how many more people like yourself, researchers and medical professionals, health professionals, are working, and capacity has certainly increased. What about some of the methodology, though, that goes into this type of research and some of the other concerns that you have? How have you seen those trends or those areas of focus change over the course of your career?
Well, I think for one thing, we do have more people from our communities that are in these systems, and that leads to system change, a greater appreciation of history, an appreciation of culture. It's sort of like having glasses or not having glasses. I believe that you have to have a historical and cultural lens when you're working with any community other than your own. And if you don't have that lens, I don't care how brilliant you are, I don't care how many PhDs or JDs or whatever you have, if you don't have a lens and an understanding into that culture, I think many of your efforts are gonna fall short. And we have examples of that, programs that didn't work because they didn't really understand and they didn't engage community members. There are some efforts. There have been efforts. I mean, one of the things that goes on, I know, that's been successful are the tribe epicenters that were established a number of years back, and to in fact gather data in the. I think there's 12 of them, as I recall, throughout the country, and they work to gather the tribal information and the local community to have a better handle on just what exactly is going on in those communities, and then can come up with recommendations to address some of those issues. But it goes back again. I think we got more people now. We need to keep those opportunities. We can't be cutting back on scholarships and funding and that allows for research that's training our own people. If those because our communities are economically the poorest. And if we don't have support students and universities and have nonprofits that can hire, retain, and train our own people, these problems will continue to persist and maybe even get worse.
I'm going to repeat the statistics that Stephanie shared earlier. The average American lifespan, 79.2 years. For a Native American person, that average lifespan is 72.7 years, a 6.5-year difference. Geez, Michael, that just seems like such a huge disparity there. In addition to some of these research methods and some of these policy perspectives we're talking about, what can be done in the short term to just change those numbers and improve our lifespans as Native people? Geez, 72.7 years, that's short. I mean, really?
Tell me about it. Tell me about it.
I hope I got. Yeah, I'm looking forward to at least a couple more decades here. I don't know.
Me too, but I don't. I think I've got a head start on you. But you know, I think it really requires us looking at this data further, more, and really looking at what are the things that we can do. You know, in the short run and in the long run. But that takes, you know, that takes a commitment by a community, a tribe, and the systems, the healthcare systems, as well as, you know, it's public health is many things. It's not just public health, and I mean it's broad. It's everything. You know, it's clean air, clean land, clean water. Those are challenges that are, you know, right now in so many places. It's ensuring that people have the things they need to thrive and communities can thrive, employment opportunities, you know, education, support for families when there are challenges, good educational systems, and that really falls back, you know, the when you look today at tribes that we've made progress. But the challenges have been daunting. And, you know, when we only have our own health centers, I think in Oklahoma, the Chickasaw is just, you know, we're just celebrating a new hospital and new programs they're building. I mean, in Alaska, the Alaska Native Health Center, I mean, they've done amazing things. And other places, you know, it's better now, I'll say, than it was 40 years ago. But is it where it needs to be? Well, the data clearly demonstrates that it's not.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take another break, and we'll come back. We'll continue our conversation. We'll be speaking with Dr. Alec Kalak, who is in San Diego, California. Dr. Alec Kalak, and he is an American Indian health policy scholar. He's going to join this conversation, and we still have the phone lines open. I'm waiting for a listener to call in. This data is pretty alarming here, folks. Life expectancy for Native American people, 6.5 years shorter than the average American. How does that make you feel? What are your thoughts in terms of why that is and what could be done to improve that data? Give us a call. Join this conversation. Let your voice be heard. 1-800-996-2848.
My name is Tammy, and I'm a member of the Little Traverse Bay Band of Odawa Indians. Smoking gave me heart disease. I used to think of cigarette smoking as something that only affected me. Then at just 44 years old, I had to look into my mom's eyes on the way into emergency heart surgery and tell her, "Mommy, I promise I won't make you bury me." My tip is, think about the people in your life who love you. They go through the pain too, maybe even more than you do.
The people you love are worth quitting for. You can quit. For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the CDC.
Support by the American Indian College Fund. The American Indian College Fund provides millions of dollars of scholarships to thousands of Native students every year. Tribal citizens of every age and experience are eligible. The deadline for applications is May 31st, and you can find everything you need to apply at collegefund.org. That's collegefund.org, or by phone at 800-766-FUND. Education is the answer.
Global leaders, policymakers, innovators, and indigenous voices will join at Arctic Encounter 2025, North America's largest Arctic policy event, at the Dena'ina Convention Center and Anchorage Museum, July 30th to August 1st in Anchorage, Alaska. This summit includes critical discussions on geopolitics and security that shape the future of the far north, builds international partnerships, and provides northern cultural experience. Registration for this global dialogue at arcticencounter.com, who support this show. Support by Costco Business Center, offering delivery to Anchorage Air Cargo Companies for shipments to rural Alaska, for business and home. More at CostcoBusinessDelivery.com. Support for this program provided by ConocoPhillips Alaska, operating in Alaska for more than 50 years and valuing the opportunity to partner with Alaska Native communities.
This is Native America Calling, and we're talking about the power of health data focused on Native Americans. How is your work in Native healthcare influenced by data and research on Native health? Are you a healthcare worker yourself, or maybe you work on the policy side of this issue? Let us know. Join the conversation at 1-800-996-2848. And we have a caller on the line right now. This is a regular. Her name is Jen, and she listens to the show online every day from her home in East Texas. Hello, Jen. Great to have you calling in today.
Thank you, Sean. This is a very, of course, all of our discussions are very important, but I think there's so many different reasons why Native Americans have a shorter lifespan, and a lot of it is attributed to the fact that, you know, they've been forced to have coal mining on their own in certain tribal nations, and they've so many have died of lung cancer and different effects of acid rain, and had their aquifers depleted for the production of coal, which brings me to my next problem, and that is the lack of water throughout the Southwest. It's getting worse. A lot of the water is being forced onto new additions going up, homes being built in the Southwest, and not to mention Las Vegas, but so that growing of crops and food is not, it's how you must have this to live your life. And then, of course, I've, from the experience the Cherokee have had over the past few years, is the fact that we have no representation in Congress, not direct representation from our own nations. And we've had, for the Cherokee people, they were promised with the new, the Treaty of New Echota, was that they'd have a seat in Congress. And yet, mm-hmm. right now, there's someone waiting to be seated and has not. Plus, all of this has a psychological effect on young people growing up and older people. And, you know, and then, of course, they have no business development going on or funding for it. We've just, like you were saying earlier, there's been so much funding and so much funding, this never happened. So thank mm-hmm. you, Sean, for letting us speak.
Thank you, Jen. Really appreciate you joining the conversation. It's tough. It's tough to be Native American in the United States. What more can we say? It's just, it's hard. As you explained, Jen, just some of the disparities that we face on a daily basis. So phone line still open for anyone else who'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-99-NATIVE. I want to bring now Dr. Alec Kalak into our conversation, an American Indian health policy scholar and also a medical student at the University of California, San Diego. And Alec, thank you again for joining the show. And I think when we listen to reports and studies and research like we're learning about today, we're often kind of prone to look at it from a policy perspective, from that lens. But I'm interested, from somebody who is studying medicine directly, is there a practical application in daily medicine for research such as this? And if so, how might someone such as yourself regard an individual patient in the kind of context that we're talking about today with this research?
Wow, what a great question. And, you know, I think, you know, already our guests have already spoken about so many topics that I think are very kind of commonplace among Native people and Native scholars and advocates, but, you know, often doesn't get time of day when it comes to actually addressing these issues in largely kind of non-Native bodies. As a future physician, about a year out of that point, you know, I often think about the structure of medical education in this country. Only about 13% of medical schools teach anything about Native American health, and when you don't have that representation in the curricula, often you know, kind of social biases and stereotypes become the assumption for our future physicians who think that our life expectancy is where it is because of biology or behavior, without realizing that actually the largest determinants of Native health in this country are actually structural, environmental, and political. So I think that's really one piece of it. I think the other is understanding the positive influences on Native health, where we can start to ask our patients, how does culture affect your health? What do you do to stay healthy? And understand it from a Native perspective, because those things look different in our communities compared to others.
Mm-hmm. Alec, what year are you in medical school?
This will be my seventh year pursuing both a medical degree as well as a PhD in public health.
Okay, great, great. So you're really far along. I imagine you've already sat down with patients, you've worked with people one-on-one. So now that you're armed with this data, you understand what these issues are, how does it influence you working directly with a patient now?
You know, I really think that medicine is often fast. We are tasked with seeing so many patients in a day. We get to spend often just a few minutes with them and understand, not just why they're here today, but also their social history, their medical history. And I think in our training, especially as medical students and residents and fellows, they often get a bit more time with patients than practicing physicians. And just to hear people's stories and their hardships, but also their interactions with healthcare providers, which are often negative when they reveal, aspects about themselves, such as indigeneity, because again, there's a lot of negative representations of Native culture and assumptions about, deaths of despair and behaviors that, really shouldn't be a focus of a medical conversation.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting to hear you describe that the largest determinants of some of our healthcare issues are regard to structural issues, economic issues, and yet you are a doctor, so you only have a limited amount of ability to impact the patients that you work with. So how do you discern there? How do you separate? How do you balance those priorities between some of these larger determinants that are beyond your scope with the day-to-day aspects of practicing medicine in a community?
Well, perhaps I'm a little greedy, but I like to argue you can address both. You have your clinical practice, but also scholarly activities, research activities, advocacy, just last week, over 1,000 medical students and physicians met for the American Medical Association meeting, the same that hosts the research that's being discussed today. And the AMA was asked to comment about a number of issues affecting minority communities, rural communities. But you often, again, don't see that outsized focus on American Indian and Alaska Native health. And I think a lot of that invisibility contributes to why these leading advocacy bodies don't always act in the interests of tribal communities.
Mm-hmm. Now, look, we're talking about just one specific study today, but I imagine throughout your career so far, you've recognized or you've seen a need for other types of research or other types of data that would be helpful in your work treating Native American people. Please share some of your insights or what better data or what more data could be helpful.
Well, I think to begin with, we have a snapshot of American Indian life expectancy as described in this JAMA study, but figures that we actually have from the CDC just from 3 years ago actually show that our American Indian and Alaska Native life expectancy today is 65, which is the same as the American public's in the 1940s. And I caution us to react appropriately to the magnitude of that disparity, but also acknowledge that that's an average, that's a national picture. When I look at the state of Native American health across California, the Midwest, the Southwest, the different areas of the country, we know that life expectancy can be even lower. And that's often research that, you know, we're not necessarily funding, and we often rely on smaller organizations, tribal governments, tribal health programs to do that research and understand, you know, what is happening in our communities and why are we dying at such young ages.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so now you're saying 65 average lifespan, so it's actually 14 years shorter than the average American lifespan. Is that correct, Alec?
Roughly, yes.
Gee whiz. Okay, that's really shocking. I want to go back to this whole issue with these death certificates being filled out sure. incorrectly. And in your work as a doctor, I mean, what is the procedure for identifying a person's race when you're treating them either as a patient or in the event of them passing away?
Yeah, so oftentimes, you know, this relies on a process of visual inspection, not really by physicians. It's usually by a coroner's office, and you know, it's just an inspection of the individual and kind of the outside phenotype of their appearance. But I, you know, want to focus more also on how we can actually fix this. Right, a lot of effort has been put into linking together different data systems at the local, state, federal, tribal level to make sure that someone's identification as American Indian stays with them from the moment they're born to the moment they die. But unfortunately, we don't have such a system in this country. So unfortunately, we do misclassify American Indian decedents, if you will, at rates up to 40%, depending on the cause of mortality, which really understates the disparity, but also misdirects research and policy dollars in order to address these issues.
Mm-hmm. What about just because I've had relatives pass away, and I've dealt with death certificates before. What about just families paying a little bit closer attention to death certificates? And if they see that a loved one is incorrectly identified as being non-native when they are native, what about just working right away to get that fixed, get that taken care of? Is that a possibility? Is that something to consider?
I think it's something worth considering, you know, especially when we think about our respect for those who are no longer with us. But I think also, you know, if you correct an individual record, there's no mechanism in place to ensure that that's propagated across all these different data systems that are decentralized and don't talk to each other. So if you're having to go from, you know, paper to fax to email to, you know, one database to another, there's no guarantee that other systems will be updated. So, it, you know, maybe a fruitless effort, but not without good intention.
Okay. And Alec, you know, going back to this issue with these shorter lives, heart disease, diabetes, substance abuse, uh-huh. accidents, these can all be major factors. And now learning that this situation is actually worse than what we've been led to believe, what are some short-term actions? And I asked this of Michael Bird as well, but what can we do? Because again, we have listeners from all over the country tuning into the show, and they're at their community level, and they're thinking about their own lives or their lives of loved ones. What can people do? What steps can people take today to turn this around?
You know, I always like to challenge and encourage those around me to you know, be advocates for their health, to be political, to get involved in you know, local elections, to, you know, send emails and letters to their representatives, because I think one issue that's really affecting us right now in this kind of political time and attack against equity, diversity, and inclusion, or EDI, is people conflating tribal self-determination, self-governance, tribal sovereignty with equity, diversity, and inclusion. And, you know, our communities are certainly a part of that conversation at times, but we've also seen research dollars at universities and other studies be terminated in the name of EDI when they're directly made to tribal governments and researchers that work with tribal communities. And these two things shouldn't be easily conflated or mixed up.
All right. Thank you, Alec. And Stephanie Woolhandler, I want to come back to you as we begin to wind down the show. We've got about another minute or so left. And the research that you and your partners have conducted, it relates to a very specific time frame. And I'm curious to know, going forward, is there a need to perhaps conduct research like this every year or every few years to keep the numbers as accurate as possible with regard to Native American populations?
Well, it would be great to repeat it every year, but we took advantage of a very special study that the Census Bureau had put together, and we worked with the Census Bureau to use that unique database to find tens of thousands of self-identified Native Americans and follow them for 11 years. And our last year was 2019, which is the year before the pandemic. And I think some of the different numbers you're hearing from Alec have to do with what happened during the pandemic, where at least the first year there was a giant drop in everyone's life expectancy, but particularly in some Native American communities. My guess is the situation here in 2025 is fairly similar to what we observed between 2008 and 2019. But I could be wrong, but we don't have the data at this point to update this in a regular way. So that's why we generated all those ratios and percentages to allow other researchers and other people in the demography and health communities to adjust their estimates to show just how severe the problems in well-being and health of the Native communities are and just how much additional resources are needed to address those problems.
Stephanie Woolhandler, Michael Bird, and Dr. Alec Kalak, I want to thank you all for joining us today and spending time educating our listeners on this very important information. And with that, unfortunately, we're out of time, so we're going to have to wrap up the conversation. But I encourage you all to join us again tomorrow for a discussion about reparations to the descendants of the Tulsa Race Massacre. It's Juneteenth, and we'll discuss a couple of events in which Native and Black history converge. I'm Sean Spruce. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Ichi skaya lhesti ichi ti diskes kil ichi tani loska nikas taneka ye chakolia akayi yanatelo ho tataleka I alanusti ta nikas se jatantoi ahuk uwela ahuk ala prostate atahesky akayi unihwata ahitike onawoti I jatata tianiyavya ayala nutanateka unakses tohi yiki nusta heha I he agets anosa Medicare ala Medicaid unataska I
Challenges to societal harmony abound. Trauma, depression, addiction. In Native communities, these challenges affect nearly everyone. The Native American Social Work Studies Institute educates social workers for careers to address the needs of Native communities. You can be part of the solution as a peer support worker, community health worker, or a counselor with culturally relevant training from the Native American Social Work Studies Institute. Info at online.nmhu.edu. New Mexico Highlands University supports this show.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Fiber Plus Internet is now available in Sandpoint and King Cove. GCI offers high-speed internet in your community at the same plans and pricing as in Anchorage. More information is available at gci.com/internet.